Look what the wind blew in. It's Jenny. She's been out in and out of Forrest's life quite a few times, and well, guess what? She just showed up. Forrest does not care why. He was just happy she's back, and for a time, things were good. But that pesky wind just keeps blowing, and as suddenly she arrives, she'll leave. The issue is, while Forrest is the one who is known for running fast, he's not the only one that's running. Jenny is running from childhood abuse. She's running from many abusive relationships. She's running from a life of dealing with drug and alcohol addiction, a life using her body to get what she wants. As bad as that sounds, give her credit, when everything started to fall apart for her, she knew exactly where to run. Of course, while Forrest is safe for her, he comes with the biggest fear of all, commitment to a relationship. As long as it was all casual, well, Jenny was fine. The second it became committal, it's time to blow. It's time to go somewhere else. If Forrest understands love, well, that makes him the smartest man alive, because I'll be honest with you, I don't understand it. I mean, love is a complicated thing, but he says he knows exactly what love is. And of course, the issue is that Jenny doesn't know what love is, right? I mean, to her, love is physical. And following that scene, I did not show you the scene afterwards. She shows Forrest that she does love him, and the only way that she's capable of understanding love. She immediately after the fact packs her bags and she leaves. For her, love is something that is not given, but something that is taken or even stolen. And well, I guess we'll just have to wait to see how it all works out for Forrest and Jenny, because we want to go spend some time with our other teacher in this sermon series. We want to go spend some time with this guy named Solomon, chasing the wind. And Solomon's not a happy man. He's just not. And that's ironic, because he is living the dream life. He's got money and power. He's a king. He has God-granted wisdom, and yet he calls everything in his life meaningless. And you're probably thinking, Barry, you've given the exact same introduction for every single sermon in this series. Yeah, I have. Because I need to remind you, this is who Solomon is, because many of the things that Solomon has is exactly what we want. It's what we're chasing in our life. And we think that once we get it, life is going to be perfect. Once I find that pleasure spot, hey, for the Philadelphia Eagles and the Kansas City Chiefs, you're thinking, tonight if my team wins the Super Bowl, all is going to be perfect with the world. It will be. Until August, because guess what happens in August? A new season starts, and so you're back making the same quest all over again, right? And next year at the end of the season, if your team don't win, then it's good that you won. So what I'm telling you is it just all keeps going in a cycle, because we all are looking for what Solomon has yet to find. Purpose. Why am I here? What's the purpose of all of this? I mean, I get up every Sunday morning and I come here, and I'm usually here somewhere around 8 o'clock, and I check out of here somewhere around noon on Sunday afternoon, and I realize y'all are somewhere in between that as far as what time. But why on earth do I keep doing this? What is the big purpose behind life? So Solomon has gone on a quest, and he tried pleasure. That's where he started. Not surprising. That's a great place to start. But eventually he grew bored with pleasure, and so he decided, thinking, that's got to be it, right? Use my mind. Understand of human thought. And after he did all that, that about drove him crazy, because people are very complicated people and he didn't understand them. So then he turned his attention to work. Work, 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 work. He did all of these projects and all of these things. He didn't have to do any of this, because the man was already loaded. He was not working for money. He was trying to work for purpose. And well, last week we found out that didn't get him what he wants, so he goes looking again. We're going to be in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 13 through 16, and this is what it says. Better a poor but wise youth than an old but foolish king who no longer knows how to heed a warning. The youth may have come from prison or kingship, or may have even been born in poverty within his kingdom. I saw that all who lived and walked under the sun followed the youth, the king's successor. There was no end to all the people who were before them, but those who came later were not pleased with the successor. This too is meaningless in chasing after the wind. So I read those, and the first question I have to ask is, what's Solomon looking for now? What's next on his list? And it's not an obvious thing, and you can tell that if you just go out and you do a little research, there's a lot of people trying to figure out, what is Solomon chasing? Now, if you have an NIV Bible and you open it up and you've got the fancy ones that have the little headings there, you can see that it says that he was chasing advancement. And if you go out on sermoncentral.com and you go look up Ecclesiastes chapter 4, you look at what all the sermons are about, they come up with four words that generally talk about what it is. And of course, the first one is they took the easy route out. They said, yeah, Solomon is chasing advancement, which means the promotion of a person's rank or status. Okay, I could make that fit. Some people say that he's chasing fame, the state of being known or talked about by many people, especially on account of notable achievements. Notice that word, achievements. So yeah, I can see how you can make that fit. Some actually like to go with the word accomplishment is what he's looking for. Something that has been achieved successfully. And some like to take all of those definitions and roll them together and say, well, he's just talking about achievement. That thing that is done successfully, typically by effort, courage, or skill. And again, all four of these, I get. And all four of them have and will make tremendous sermons. But I'm not real sure I like any of those four words for what I think Solomon is chasing here. I looked at this and I dug around and I fished around and I finally came up with a word that I like. And you know what the word I came up with is? Legacy. Solomon is now chasing legacy. And what is a legacy? Something transmitted or received from an ancestor or predecessor, so from the past. So Solomon is trying to look at how things are going to flow through him. Why legacy? Well, remember, the issue Solomon had with toil was eventually what happens? You die. And when you die, the person you leave your money to, well, they don't necessarily deserve it. This is important because Solomon sees life as meaningless because, well, there is this thing that we all struggle with. Even when you are the youngest to the oldest, we all struggle with the same word. It's called mortality. You're mortal. You're not going to live forever. I know some of us will make it very old, and some may die younger, but you will not be here forever. And so Solomon has gotten to the point where he's chased pleasure, and he's chased understanding, and he's chased work. He's finally gotten to the point, it's what good does it do to live if just eventually I'm going to die? Solomon wants to figure out how to live forever. So he decides maybe the secret and the purpose of life is to pass on myself. And he tells us in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, 1, a good name is better than fine perfume on the day of death, better than the day of birth. So he gets to say, if I've got a good name, if I've done something good in my life, if I've got a legacy, and I'm going to pass it on, maybe that's what gives my life purpose. Now here's the amusing thing. Today, when I say the name Solomon, and I connect it to the Bible, I know what you think about. We admire him because, A, he was rich, right? And we would all like to be rich at some point. I don't care who you are. If somebody walked up to you and handed you $1 million, no strings attached, you're not going to look at him and say, no, I'm all good. Okay, if you do, please let me know. You can send them to my house, okay? If they walk up and hand me $1 million, say no strings attached. We would all like to be rich. We could all sit here and think about things. If I had $1 million, think of all the people I could help. Think of all the things I could do. We could make lists. This is the reason people buy lottery tickets, is because, you know what? We desire that, because even if we don't want it for ourselves, we think about how much better the world I could make if I had more financial resources. We've all had those thoughts. And while we see Solomon as rich, the next thing we think about is king. He was in charge of the world. He had everything. Wouldn't you like to be the king of everything? We say no, because we've been taught that's bad. But really, think about our life. Don't we really want to be king of everything? We want to be in charge of my life, right? We want everything to kind of fit with the way that I think the world works. And while we think of those things about Solomon, that's his legacy to us, Solomon didn't agree with that philosophy. Matter of fact, he said, better a poor but wise youth than an old but foolish king who no longer knows how to heed a warning. Solomon didn't see himself as wise. Solomon didn't focus on his riches. And Solomon really didn't see any greatness in being king. As a matter of fact, he found more work from being king than if he was a poor person sitting on the side of the road. Solomon had been chasing life. And ultimately, you know what he decides? This thing that we call legacy. And we're all striving for it. If you have kids, you are trying to pass yourself on through your kids. You're trying to teach them principles and skills and things and scripture and all this stuff. And you're trying to pour it into them, because someday you realize you're not going to be here. They're going to probably out-survive you. And that is the way that you're going to pass on. Okay? We do that by making charitable contributions. We try to build a legacy for ourselves. Here's the ironic thing, is Solomon decides legacy is meaningless. This is what he writes again in verses 14 through 16. The youth may have come from prison to kingship, or he may have been born in poverty within his kingdom. I saw that all who lived and walked under the sun followed the youth of the king's successor. There was no end to all the people who were before them. But those who came later were not pleased with the successor. This too is meaningless and chasing after the wind. Solomon looks at this term legacy, and you know what he decided? It does not matter where you start. Wouldn't that have been good information for Jenny to have? How you started your life, let me break it on a faith level here. How you came to Christ is not important. Whether you grew up in the church and you were here your entire life, or whether you were a person that didn't come to Christ until later on in life, I hate to tell you this, there is not a section in heaven that says, here are where all the people that came to church their whole life sit, and here are all the ones that made it by the skin of their teeth. By the way, I hate that term. I am not going to make it to heaven by the skin of my teeth. I'm going to make it to heaven by the grace of God. Okay? And that grace of God covers everybody equally. Legacy doesn't matter where you start. Legacy, he decides, perhaps you've messed up, but you can overcome it. Until you draw your last breath, there is always a do-over. There is always the chance to say, tomorrow I am going to change things and I am going to have a better life. Isn't that kind of the promise of the American dream, as we call it? Come here and you'll have a better life. He decides even if you were in prison, you can still rise to kingship. Well, that's good to know. I've never been in prison, but if a prisoner can make it that far, then, boy, the sky's the limit for me, right? But he decides it doesn't matter whether you were a prisoner or not. He even says even if you start out poor under one king, you can still build yourself a legacy. So this idea of being king meant absolutely, positively nothing to him. But as he continues to pull apart this idea of legacy, he then begins where he always ends up. It's temporary. I saw that all who lived and walked under the sun followed the youth and the king's successor. There was no end to all the peoples who were before him. But those who came later were not pleased with the successor. This too is meaningless and chasing after the wind. Do you know who the most popular person on a losing football team is? The backup quarterback. Because if your team is losing, then it's got to be the quarterback's fault, right? So if they would just fix the quarterback, so put the backup quarterback in, and all will be good with the world. The person that's always sitting there doing nothing is the person that we always want to focus our life on, right? At the end of the NFL season, you know what always happens? They keep the players and fire the coaches. And they go out and they hire new coaches because they're like, well, that's got to be the problem because their legacy isn't there. Because there's always got to be something better. And so Solomon begins to look at this idea. It doesn't matter what you've done in the past because eventually it's all going to be temporary. You see, all things new are exciting. When you're the new kid on the block, when you're the new person, then you're exciting, okay? You see this in churches. When they get a new pastor, usually they get a little bump because he's new, he's shiny, he's fresh out the box, he's different. Okay, this is the good thing. I'm different 11 years later. You're still wondering what you're going to do next. I try to keep you a little off balance sometimes. We love it when we get new clothes to wear. Usually when you go out and buy a new outfit, do you go out and buy the new outfit and then hang it in the closet and say, I'll wear that in a few weeks? No, it's the first thing you wear because it's new clothes. When your kids get new toys, they quickly become the new favorite toy, don't they? That thing that they were enthralled with before, well, that kind of goes on the back and becomes like Woody pushed off the thing and Buzz is now right in the middle of the bed and you get it, right? It's the new toy. Adults always seem to love their new jobs. Yeah, but after you've been there a few years, that new job just ain't so new anymore, and it's a lot like the old job you used to have, isn't it? Yeah. And while the new relationships, they're always awesome, so you've been in those for a few years, and you find out that those relationships are a lot like the ones you had before, and guess what? They ain't so new anymore. Newness seems to bring out optimism. But this time, things are going to be different. This is why advertisers love to promote things as new and improved, right? It's new. It's different. Try it again. Even though the box still says Tide, it's new and improved Tide. So come and try it again. Well, maybe all they changed was the color on the box. They didn't really change what was on the inside. You see, they're trying to build for themselves a legacy of newness. Solomon realizes that, you know what? People are fickle. Now, before you correct me, I looked it up. Did you know fickle is not a word? I spelled fickle in my original one, and it kept coming back and telling me that was not spelled correctly, and so I had to go look it up. And actually, the correct term is people are fickle. And I like that. Generations change legacy, don't they? Ponder this for a second. Are people really remembered the same way all the way through history? We see it today. People that were once considered great are now considered outcasts. We have holidays named for people that we no longer want to celebrate. But we named the holiday for them because we considered them great people because of their accomplishments and achievements. But then as history went on and we began to examine their life a little more closely, we realized they really weren't great people. They just accomplished great things, and so no longer do we want to celebrate their legacy. We like to think of history as static, but as time goes on, history changes. You probably think, wait a minute, it's in the past, and we can't time travel. So how on earth does history change when history is about events? The events don't change, but you do understand what does change is our perspective and how we look at them. If you think about how history is perceived, how I perceive things the day after it happens versus 20 years down the road from after it happens, it changes, right? Now, did the event change? No, it still happened just like it happened. But as time goes on and I begin to look at the events, Well, maybe my opinion changes about why those events happened. Maybe my opinion changes about the people that were involved in the events. Maybe my opinion changes about myself in relationship to those events. And so Solomon looked at this madness. And he said, guess what? Building a great legacy for myself? Passing on a good name? Just doing things that maybe will make people talk about me great? A great epitaph on my tombstone? A great obituary in the newspaper after I'm dead? Okay, maybe it'll matter the day right after I die. Maybe people will shed a few tears because I'm no longer around. But in the end, it's all meaningless. And I understand the thought process. I did. You work your entire life building a good name, but then reality comes and, well, those that really never knew you will eventually decide your legacy, won't they? I mean, today I have two sons, Benjamin and Caleb, and maybe someday, this scares me a little bit, they'll have kids. And maybe I'll have a relationship with those kids, right? Because maybe it'll happen before I'm no longer on this planet. But eventually those kids will have kids. And odds are I probably won't be around for those, okay, at least not for much of their life. And eventually those kids will have kids and so on down the road. And eventually who I will be nothing more than a bunch of stories told by people that handed it down from multiple generations. And maybe if I'm lucky, a picture in a picture book. That's who I'll become. And you're probably thinking, Barry, that's depressing. Welcome to Solomon's world. That's when you begin looking for purpose and how I'm just going to be remembered. It all becomes meaningless because eventually, believe it or not, you probably won't be remembered at all. A few hundred years down the road, if Jesus doesn't come back before then, and there are multiple generations of Creases that maybe all trace themselves back up to me. Isn't that scary? There could be multiple generations of me. That would be awesome, wouldn't it? But there could be, and they won't even know who I am, because they will have never met me. And the stories will begin to fade. And so my legacy is going to be all about what? Maybe one or two generations? And then the world will change? What kind of purpose is that? Here I thought legacy was forever and that was going to be my eternity. And now I'm finding out legacy is just as temporary as work and pleasure and understanding. They all have shelf lives. So legacy isn't the purpose unless you can pass along a valuable legacy. Something that can withstand the test of time. So if you're in chapter 4, now you just got to turn a page or maybe just drop down depending on how small the writing is in your Bible. I am in Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verses 1 through 7. Guard your steps when you go to the house of God. Go near and listen rather than offer the sacrifice of fools. Do not know that they do wrong. Do not be quick with your mouth and do not be hasty with your heart to utter anything before God. God is in heaven and you are on earth, so let your words be few. A dream comes when there are many cares and many words mark the speech of a fool. When you make a vow to God, do not delay to fulfill it. He has no pleasure in fools. Fulfill your vow. It is better not to make a vow than not to fulfill it. Do not let your mouth lead you into sin. And do not protest to temper the messenger. My vow was a mistake. Why should God be angry at what you say and destroy the work of my hands? Much dreaming and many words are meaningless. Therefore, fear God. When Solomon began to think about legacy, he thought about how people should consider him, but how he approached God. Now, this is a big moment for Solomon because while Solomon has mentioned God in other passages, this may be the first time that Solomon is considering God's opinion on the matter of legacy. Did he consider God's opinion on pleasure? Nah, he just went out and partied it up. Did he assume for God, look for God's attention on thought? Well, no, it's just what I think, right? How about work? No, it's what I want. But all of a sudden, as he moves into this term of legacy, he realizes there is no purpose in this either. He actually begins to think about what is eternal. You see, before he was too busy partying, too busy thinking, too busy working. Now he's standing there and he's looking back all across the oceans and he's thinking, you know what? Times have changed. When I am a child, I am all about the fun. Think about it, if you have children or you're around children, they are looking for the next fun thing. If it's not fun, what's the word they use for it? It's boring, okay? They are looking for fun. But as I get into my late teens and maybe into my 20s, I began to figure out that life isn't all about fun, and I actually began to think a little bit for myself. This is why teens and parents have such problems, because you know what? You have your opinions, and now all of a sudden they have theirs, okay? And they begin to think for themselves, and we don't like that, but that's just how life works. Then I hit my 30s and 40s, and I'm in the power years of my life, right? This is the year I want to make hay while the sun is shining. I want to put away as much as I can. I want to work as hard as I can. I want to think about my retirement. I want to make my mark on this world. All of these terms we probably used ourselves. Then I hit my 50s, and this is kind of where I am right now. I may be into my 60s, and I begin to get a little perspective because there just aren't that many what next to think about. I mean, what's next? Grandkids? I have no idea. And like I said, that thought scares me some, and hopefully I'm quite a few years away from grandkids. Retirement? I could think about it in September. I really could. I've done well with my savings. I could think about it. But could you imagine me sitting at home retired doing nothing right now? I would drive my wife crazy. She would kick me out in a heartbeat. They don't have enough duct tape to keep me in a reclining chair that long. It just wouldn't happen. How many more what next do I have to think about? It begins with not thinking about just now. What's next is going to be, what am I passing on? What have I taught my kids? Have I taught them about God? So today I'm going to give you some practical advice. Not my advice, though. I'm going to give you 5 practical things to remember in your approach to relating to God. And I'm going to encourage you to not only apply them in your life, but these are the things that we need to be passing down to the next generation so that they will understand how to relate to God. So hopefully you are taking notes. If you're not filling in blanks, hopefully you're going to make mental notes, because these are the things you need to take home. How do you build into the future? And it has nothing to do with your bottom line, your savings account, or some stories that you're passing down to your kids. These are it. And Solomon outlines them right there in that passage that we just said. Number one, do not become conceited with your approach to God. Solomon starts out, he says, guard your steps when you go to the house of God. Watch where you're walking. Guard your approach to life. Life is not a 4-lane highway where you pick wherever you want to go. We are supposed to be showing our kids that it is what? A narrow path that leads to God. A few that are find it. And we are to guard that path and make sure that path stays clear, make sure the road is plowed, the bumps are out of it, and that it leads toward God, and we are to guard it with our life. You know, we are living in a world where the next generation is going to have a hard time finding God, much harder than they had back in the 50s and 60s. A lot harder than I had it in the 80s and 90s. They're going to really have to search for God. Folks, as the church of today, we better make sure we keep the road open and the path clear, because it's going to be very difficult for them to find it, especially if we let the weeds overgrow it and we allow it to take to the point where nobody can see it. It's our responsibility. It is our legacy to pass on to them a paved path that they can find to God. it says that worship is not about the actions you take, but the decisions you make. Go near to listen rather than offer the sacrifice of fools who do not know that they do wrong. I love this passage. I have to tell you, this is not one that I've read a whole bunch, but when I read, I just wanted to highlight it. I thought about getting a brush and painting on the. This is something we need to remember. Because a lot of times we paint worship as what I want. We come in to receive from worship that thing that will make our life. And a lot of times we come in and we speak a lot faster than we talk. I have that problem. I have a lot more to tell you than I want to hear from you. Honestly, I did. Everybody in life can tell you that. I have opinions and everybody's entitled to them. And we all have that mindset. And God says, you know what? When you come, come with an open heart. Don't come with a checklist of what you think worship is. Don't check the boxes and say, I'm all done. Come with an open heart, ready to listen. I love the next one. God is God and not you. Do not be quick with your mouth. Should I read that again? Do not be quick with your mouth. Do not be hasty in your heart to utter anything before God. God is in heaven and you are on earth, so let your words be few. A dream comes when there are many cares and many words mark the speech of a, I love it, fool. Old youth minister used to tell me, 2 ears, 1 mouth. Listen twice as much as you speak. I'm still learning the lesson about my life. But you understand, you're not God. And that's sometimes we think we are, but you're not God. Be consistent. When you make a vow to God, do not delay to fulfill it. He has no pleasure in fools. Solomon likes that word, doesn't he? Fulfill your vow. It is better not to make a vow than to make one and not fulfill it. Do not let your mouth lead you into sin. And do not protest to the temple messenger, my vow was a mistake. Why should God be angry with what you say and destroy the work of your hands? In other words, if you're not going to do it, don't say it. If you're not up to the job, don't commit to it. Don't make a promise you're not going to keep. You want to lose a kid faster than anything else? Lie to them. Okay? You want to lose a kid's respect faster than anything else? Then don't pay respect to them. Okay? Don't treat them like they're people. And you know what? It works the same with adults. You want to pass on a legacy? Be consistent. Now, you can be consistently wrong. That's okay. But at least be consistent about it. All right? Don't do one thing and say another. Be consistent in what you do. If you're going to say you're going to do it, then make sure if you don't do it, you die trying. Okay? God wants consistency in our lives, and that's what we need to pass on. That's how you keep that road open. And then the last thing he tells us, don't make it about what you think or say. Make it about God. This is kind of like Solomon's catch-all. If you missed the other 4 points and you just want to come with one, we could just go to this one. Much dreaming and many words are meaningless. If you have to explain everything to everybody, you haven't really taught them anything, have you? Therefore, fear God. A good name will fade, but a godly faith is forever. If I pass my faith on to my kids and I am bedded into them and it grows in their life and they do the same thing, and then eventually where does their faith connect back to? Not to me. I got to get out of the way and let it connect to God. I think too often times we're trying to connect our faith back to ourselves. You need to do this because you grew up in this house, you grew up this way, this is how you were raised. Legacy doesn't work that way. See, it's up to us today to find a legacy that we can pass on to the next generation, not one of traditions, one of godly faith, one that allows them to seek and find their Savior, to find their purpose, and His name is Jesus.